strap on the boots and scrape up the knuckles.
Oh, what a hit!
He got jacked.
This is the Big Red Rage. Presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert.
Murray's gonna score! Touchdown! Slammed to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
The Rage is brought to you by Santan Ford and Gilbert. Right on the price. Right on the corner of the Santan 202 Freeway in Val Vista. SeatGeek, your ticket to great seats. And by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast.
The Red Sea is rising up!
Temperature rising, vision blurring, rage taking over.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
I'm ready. I'm 100% ready. I'm telling you I'm ready.
And Ron Wolfley.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Unleash the fury!
T-minus 7 days and counting until the 2024 NFL Draft, and you know it's close. Tick-tock. Because, well, not just because Monty told the media today that, quote, the hay is in the barn, but because Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network draft analyst, he met with the media this week. Do you know how long his conference call lasted, Ron Wolfley?
No.
More than 2 hours. He talked to the media about the draft. Because America's appetite for the draft is somewhere around Wolf's appetite for the Dagwood pepperoni sandwiches. Put it that way. It's on par.
And you know,
with that.
Paulie, this time of year, here it is. It's that time of year. Draft subterfuge is kicking into overdrive right now. The final week leading up to the draft, this is where it gets the worst, Paul.
Yeah. And maybe some of these teams are starting to overthink it. Maybe just a little bit. I'll get to that in a moment. It's the Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley, soon to be joined by free agent running back DJ Dallas. He's going to come in. He's got a great backstory. You know what? He made the right move after 4 years with the Seattle Seahawks. He saw the light, literally the sunlight. He came to the AZ. We'll get into all that. You have a lot in common with DJ Dallas, two guys who excel on special teams. So we'll get into all that coming up. But I found it very intriguing. When Washington earlier this week, they had a top 30 visit for a number of players. In fact, they brought in all four quarterbacks together. Jane Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, and Michael Penix at the same time, as if they might be able to observe these guys and see which guy stands out. I mean, and by the way, why are you bringing in Michael Penix when you're drafting number two overall? Because maybe, just maybe, you might swing a deal with the Raiders. If the Raiders come up for Jaden Daniels, and then there you are at 13, and you get Michael Penix.
Boy, that is really interesting, Paulie. That could definitely be a scenario right now. But once again, that would be so odd if you were the agent of one of those quarterbacks. Wouldn't you say, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do it. Wouldn't you say that? Wouldn't there be some type of objection? Obviously, you're going to bring them all in at the same time. It just doesn't sound right to me. Yet at the same time, you don't want to appear as though you're afraid of comparison either, right, yeah, Paul?
So, exactly. And we got stuff flying everywhere. I'm going to get into stuff about Denver and Minnesota and reports about the New York Giants. But you mentioned the word scenarios, and that's something that Monty Ossenfort used today as the Cardinals GM and head coach Jonathan Gannon. They both met the media, their annual pre-draft press conference. And here's Monty Ossenfort when asked about, okay, the status of his big board.
I'd say our board right now is 95% to 98% complete. We're, you know, I think hay's in the barn, maybe that's a good way to put it. So we're in a good spot. We're in a really good spot. And so now I'd say for the next week is when we do turn our attention to scenarios. And, you know, this guy goes here, and we use the mocks to take a look at that. And I would say, I think for the next week, what we'll do is we'll throw different scenarios at each other and how will we react if this guy's available, if this guy's not available. And so that's what really this last week is for me.
And Wolf, we know from a number of GMs around the league over the years that they do this, do they not? They do simulations, different ways the NFL draft could unfold, and to make sure that they're prepared accordingly.
Yeah, Paulie, no doubt about it. They do a lot of scenarios, but I have to tell you, just listening to Monty Ossenfort, can I just say right now, what part of the board is not done, Paul? Is it the top 5%? Is it the bottom? Is it somewhere in the middle? What is the 5% that is still out there right now. Isn't that intriguing to you?
Well, he was asked how many players are on your big board, because the former Cardinals GM used to have 120, right? Didn't he have the top 120
yes.
board?
Yes.
So, but Monty Austin Ford didn't answer that question. And then JG joked after he sort of avoided the question, right, and meandered around a little bit without giving an actual number. JG told a media member, yeah, you got no chance. You're not getting the number on the big board. That's not happening. All Monty said is, quote, it's extensive. Well, when you have 11 draft picks, most in the NFL, and who knows if you're going to have two first-round picks or maybe more. So perhaps that's the unknown at this point. Maybe that's the last 3%.
Yeah, Paulie, it's just so fascinating to me right now. I mean, what did are they following up a lead? Is there a report that is out there? Do they have some private investigators on stuff? They do this from time to time because, listen, the player, they can see the player on tape. They can see the player on tape clearly. That part of it, I think they feel really, really good about. It's the personal part. It's the person part of it that they've got to check and do their due diligence on, and maybe that's what's still out there.
Okay, you mentioned trade scenarios. So we saw a report earlier this week that Minnesota might be interested in dealing number 11, number 23, and if necessary, Justin Jefferson to the Cardinals. Okay, there's that scenario. There's Peter Schrager, who put out his mock draft, NFL Network, and then he went out with Dan Patrick, and he said that he had the Giants trading from 6-4 with the Cardinals to get J.J. McCarthy, and Schrager said immediately after he put it out, he had a number of other teams text him and say, wait a minute, where'd that come from? Did you get that from Joe Shane, the GM? Did you get that from the head coach, Brian Daboll? They want to know, because there is a lot of interest in J.J. McCarthy at number 4. And then there was an insider out of Denver today, Wolf, who's reporting that Sean Payton is, quote, ready to mortgage the franchise's future to move up and get a quarterback at number 4. And a trade package might include Patrick Surtain, their top 3 cornerback.
Okay, Paulie. Now, once again, I'm not saying that this couldn't happen, Paul. I'm not. I'm just questioning everything
sure.
you just said.
Okay.
And I know you're not the one saying it, Paul. I know you're reporting it right now, and you're right. But to me, this is the great thing about this coming week. This is the week where the draft subterfuge kicks into hyperdrive right now. And you know what, Paulie? I honestly, you could get a general manager that would step up in front of a microphone and say anything. And it might be the 100% truth, and nobody's going to believe that it is.
That's right. In fact, Bruce Arians did that 1 year. There was 1 year where he mentioned who the Cardinals were interested in taking. Nobody took him seriously, and the Cardinals took that guy. I got to go back and research that because it was hilarious.
Yeah, but Paulie, once again, I think BA probably just said it the way that it was.
You're right.
I don't think he was thinking, man, nobody's going to believe me anyways. I might as well say it. I think BA just said it.
All right, so Monty Austin Ford is a current Cardinals GM, and hey, it's his job to listen, is it not? And based on all the reports, he's getting plenty of calls.
We've had talks with multiple teams, and multiple teams have checked in with us. And I think the way I look at it is like, guys, I love my house. I love where I live, okay? My wife loves where we live. If all of a sudden there's a knock on my door and someone's going to offer me something, and I'm going to look and see what they're offering me. And if I open that up and it's something I'm not expecting, hey, Shannon, let's go pack up. It's time to roll.
So there you go, right?
That's great, Paul.
If you get the Trey Lance package, if you get 3 first-round picks, oh, you know what, kids? Start packing. We're moving. We're selling this house. Wolf, the question is, who's willing to exceed the competition? Because if there are 4 teams who covet that 4th pick overall and the franchise quarterback, then guess what? The price just keeps going up like in a housing bidding war.
Yeah, Paulie, honestly, right now, if there are 4 teams that are interested in number 4, we're talking 3 number ones and some change.
I like the Justin Jefferson trade package. I like the Patrick Surtain trade package. I'll take an all-pro plus two first-round picks, a guy who's plug and play any day of the week. Hey, it's a Cardinals draft party. It's all next week, presented by Arizona Ford Dealers on the Great Lawn. Yes, the first round live. We'll get players, coaches. We'll hear from everyone. Great time. Go to azcardinals.com/draft party. We continue with the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert.
Minute 47 to go in the half. The game tied at 3 apiece. Snap to Murray. Five-step drop. Steps up, throws high over the middle, but what a catch! Inside the 30-yard line by McBride for a first down at the 27 where he's tackled. But that was an incredible grab. That was a high pass that McBride went up the ladder and pulled in. Snap to Murray, he'll throw. Looks left, fires left in the end zone. It is caught by McBride, and it's a touchdown! Kyler Murray engineers a 99-yard touchdown drive, and the Cardinals take a 9-3 lead in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, his confidence is through the roof. You know, he's become a matchup nightmare for, you know, whoever's on him. You know, if they're going to put a safety on him, it's tough for safeties to guard him. Super athletic. Sky's the limit for Trey.
Yeah, he was a matchup nightmare. In fact, that's why he got double coverage pretty much the whole final month of the season as defenses evolved, and he saw a lot more attention, and rightfully so. It's the Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. We are Santan Ford, Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley. We did Cardinals Underground, the podcast, earlier this week. Our Jim Almahundro put together a video meld of Trey McBride, all his highlights, and you realize just how dynamic he was, Wolf, over the course of last season. The athleticism, the ability to make some highlight reel catches, a lot of one-handed catches, make guys miss, run through other guys. Was there a Cardinals player who took a bigger leap last season than Trey McBride?
No, Paulie, you're right about that. No way. 81 receptions on the season for 825 yards. I think that touchdown total is really going to come up this year. He had three touchdowns last year. But you know me, Paulie. The thing I'm most proud of Trey McBride is how he blocked, especially at the point of attack. He became a little bit of a dog. He can get a lot better, and he wants to get better, but he became a little bit of a dog right there. And if you tell me you can line up, once again, an 11 personnel with a tight end and a running back that's James Conner, and three wide receivers in run-down situation, and you can either run or throw the ball, that offense is going to be high octane. As a matter of fact, I think we saw a little bit of that the last four games of the regular season last year.
No doubt, especially with James Conner being the receiving threat he is. Yeah, just keeping defenses honest, right?
Yep.
In fact, here's Trey McBride this week. Players are back in the building working out. They call it the off-season program, and here's Trey McBride on that.
Not so much this year, maybe last year, but now it's like I know the teachers, you know, so it's a little more, it's a little, you know, cooler to come to school now. So, no, this is great. I'm fired up to be in year two with this staff, to see all the new guys that came in, to just be back in the building, have everyone back. It's a lot of energy, a lot of excitement, and I'm fired up to be back.
Asked if it's like the first day of school when you're what would you like to see in the offseason? I mean, when you look at Trey McBride, do you think he should or has the potential to put on more weight, or would you fear that would detract from his athleticism? Where are you on that front?
No, Paulie, I wouldn't be afraid that it's going to detract from his athleticism. This is just me. I'd love to see Trey carry 250 pounds. I'd love to see him carry 250. I don't know if he would agree with that, but I think he does need a little bit more butt. I think he does move very, very well, and I don't think it would really hurt him if he got into the weight room and he said, man, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to put on 7 pounds, that's what I'm going to do. I think those 7 pounds would really help him, especially in rundown situation.
How much would it help him to add wide receiver one?
It'd be huge. Can you imagine? Honestly, right now, that is the thing that is missing from this offense is wide receiver one.
Well, here's Jonathan Gannon, the head coach, on the upside of Trey McBride after year number two in the NFL.
Sky's the limit, you know. Obviously had a really good year last year. He's got a really good improvement plan for himself moving forward. I think we're going to be able to help him with that. and just being consistent with what he's doing, with all the techniques, what he's asked, but he'll be a premier player for us. There's no doubt about that.
And there's no doubt he's asked to block. I mean, you're talking about a run offense that was top five in the NFL, the whole cram it vertical. Whether you're a receiver or especially a tight end, if you're not able to block your position, you're probably not getting that many snaps under Jonathan Gannon and Drew Petsing, right?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it, Paulie. It really is. It's just a huge advantage. Think of the San Francisco 49ers. Now, they use a lot of power personnel groups. There's no doubt about it. But think about their 11 personnel and how often they use that in rundown situation, which is first and 10, second and 1-6. That's because of George Kittle, and it makes their offense special. I'm telling you, I keep stressing this, and you know it, Paulie. I was talking about this last year with Trey. I tease him about this all the time, but the great thing is this kid wants to be a true stud tight end that can line up like George Kittle and go out there and allow the Arizona Cardinals to do a lot of different things in rundown situation. To your point, Paulie, imagine getting in 11 personnel. That's not considered a power personnel group. Yet at the same time, when you got James Conner running and you got Trey McBride, who did a great job blocking at the point, man, now all of a sudden you got a massive advantage, and that's what the Cardinals have to capitalize going forward.
All right, here's what Trey McBride says he wants to improve on here this offseason.
I want to be a better run-blocking tight end. I want to be an all-around guy, and there's a lot of plays that I left out there. You know, obviously I had a good year last year, but there's so much more on the table that I left out there. There's a lot of plays I could have made that I didn't make, or there's things that I need to get better at. So going back, watching the film, looking at the mistakes I made, how can I improve, how can I see defenses better, and ultimately I'm just excited to have a full year with Kyler to build that chemistry.
You hear how he's hard on himself, too. I see that on the sidelines a lot. I mean, he's having a big game, and he really dwells on maybe a minor play he didn't make. So he's demanding of himself, Wolf, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's a high achiever is, you know, he's always striving for that perfection that's so hard to reach. I guess here's my question on Trey McBride. He has that athleticism. He has really soft hands. He's able to run after catch, rarely goes down on first contact. Do you want to use him in the trenches, or would you like to feature him more ideally like a Travis Kelce?
No, you want him to be George Kittle, not Travis Kelce. You do, Paulie.
Okay.
It's a massive advantage. It really is. You want him to be George Kittle, man. Let him go out there, and it's the reason why he's got to put on a little bit of weight. And can I just say this, too? The clip you just played right there where he focused on the negative, where he's got to get better. You know who else used to do that? Walter Payton.
Oh.
Walter Payton was obsessed with focusing on where he needed to get better and where he needed to improve. He didn't want to hear about the accolades. He didn't want to hear about how great he was. He wanted you to focus on where he needed to get better. And I hear a little bit of that in Trey McBride. That's special to me.
Remember we had his tight end coach on, Ben Steele, right? And what'd he say? Trey McBride would have a big game, and he had some big games. It was 34 years between 100-yard receiving games by a Cardinals tight end. He did it twice in just over a month, and then Ben Steele, he'd come in on Monday morning and say, okay, I got a cut up here of all the plays you didn't make. So they do a good job of keeping him humble and letting him know there's still plenty of progress to be made. Wolf, do you think tight end in this draft, now that we're a week away, is a sleeper position to some degree, especially maybe on day three or one of those three third-round picks? Considering Jeff Swaim is not under contract, you don't have a lot of depth right now, you know, in that room at the tight end position.
Yeah, Paulie, that's really a good point right there. But what's interesting about this is they've got Trey McBride, obviously, and he can be the stud tight end, but he could also be the move tight end. Now, what does that mean? Well, that allows the Arizona Cardinals and Monty Ossenfort and JG to look at who's the best blocking tight end in this draft. Because we could always move Trey McBride to the move tight end when we go 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, and then we could bring a stud tight end like Jeff Swaim, only younger, and not coming off injury. You could bring in a young guy who was the best blocking tight end maybe in the draft in that third round, Paul, and all of a sudden you're set.
Yeah, I mean, with 11 picks and all those picks on day two and three, I would not be surprised. You're right. That's probably on the radar, I'm guessing. Hey, learn more about Cardinals season tickets, premium seating, group tickets, and the all-new luxury field seating experiences today. Check out the Cardinals 2024 home schedule. Go to azcardinals.com/tickets, azcardinals.com/tickets. All right, Cardinals added a running back slash return man. His attitude is, look, it takes special teams players to have a special type of attitude. Sounds like our own Ron Wolfley, right? There's a similarity between the Cardinals and Seahawks' former team, DJ Dallas, next.
Play fake, looks. Now he dumps it off in the flat far side, and DJ Dallas gets his first touchdown, Seahawks! Dallas gets the handoff, and he is going to take it in untouched. Touchdown, Seahawks! From the four-yard line, DJ Dallas is in over that left side. Russell takes the snap, hands it to Dallas. He is in! Touchdown, Seahawks! From the shotgun, first and 10, hands it off to Dallas, and he's going to pound his way in. Touchdown, Seahawks! DJ Dallas. The Seahawks can get a first down. They get a touchdown instead! Touchdown, Seahawks! DJ Dallas!
That's Steve Rabel, Seahawks Radio. So let's see here. From 300 cloudy days per year to 300 plus sunny days per year, a longtime Seahawk who has seen the light, if you will. We don't typically like the Seahawks, but former Seahawks, okay, who are going to help the Cardinals win in the future. Big ups, big props here on the Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. DJ Dallas is our guest. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Arizona, DJ. Although, you're pretty familiar with Arizona before you ever signed on the line that is dotted, correct?
No doubt. I moved out here right after my rookie season. Me and my wife bought our house, and we've been here ever since. And I'll trade the cloudy days for sun any day, any day.
So, wait a minute. What brought you to Arizona, right? A Georgia guy. We'll get into that. Drafted by the Seahawks, 2020. So, why the AZ?
So, I trained out here pre-draft, and I just kind of fell in love with AZ. And it was, you know, I've been here ever since. I've literally been here ever since. I haven't even been home.
So you didn't need any directions? You didn't need any? No, none of that.
Not at all.
Boom, you're just ready to go.
Yes, sir.
All right, so tell me about just, you know, what you saw in the Cardinals. Remember when you met the media earlier this offseason, right, after you had just joined, and you talked about what you saw, maybe especially in that Week 18 game against the Cardinals?
Oh, man. So, last game of the season, really nothing to really play for. Like, when I was on my former team, we were playing to, you know, maybe sneak into the playoffs. But just the energy and effort that the guys were giving, and just seeing JG on the sideline, like, just really into the game and without anything to play for, that's what kind of drew me in to this opportunity, and I'm excited to be here.
So, I mean, you know, look, if there's one thing about your former head coach with the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, he was known for his energy. Do you see a similarity with the Cardinals head coach?
No doubt. And yeah, that's what drew me in. Just seeing the similarities with Pete, spending 4 years with Pete, and then, you know, kind of looking over to the other sideline and saying, like, yeah, that's a guy I could play for.
How much do you think your Week 7 game against the Cardinals factored into their interest, right? I mean, I'm looking at it right now. For those who don't remember, you had four punt returns for a career-high 47 yards. You had a career-long 32-yard return. You also had a kickoff return for 24 yards. Do you think you caught JG's eye in that game?
Oh, man, I had a fumble that game, too, by my old teammate and childhood friend Joey Blunt. And,
that's right.
Yeah, so I told him after the game, I'm like, yeah, I got to get you back for that.
All right, let's go back to your childhood, and we're going to get to JG here in a minute, and we're going to talk about the kickoff, but let's go back to your childhood. So let me get this straight. Your hometown of?
Brunswick, Georgia.
Brunswick, Georgia. By the way, I think of Brunswick, I think of bowling.
Oh.
Brunswick.
No correlation.
No correlation. In
Not
fact,
at all.
Couldn't be further from the truth. Our Jim Omohundro got into it. So Brunswick was once called the shrimp capital of the world.
Yeah.
So it's on the coast.
We've got a shrimp and grits festival that's fire. Like, it's amazing.
You also have what's known as the Brunswick Rockin' Stew-bilee.
Oh, with the Brunswick Stew. Yeah, that's also amazing. Like, you go out there, you probably leave like 10 pounds heavier.
Okay, because, the city lays claim to the Brunswick Stew, which consists of, it's a tomato-based stew containing various types of lima beans, corn, okra, and other vegetables, and one or more types of meat. So you're very familiar with this.
Oh, for sure.
When you're hungry, how much stew can you eat? You put it down?
Yeah, give me a bowl or two.
Here's what's ironical, if you will, as I make up a word, is just recently on the Big Red Rage here, we had D-line coach Derek LeBlanc on. He hails from Brobridge, Louisiana, the crawfish capital of the world. So somebody needs to host a cookout, and we all need to be invited, either you or Coach LeBlanc.
Oh, we can do it. We can do it. During the season, before the season, after the season, you just let me know.
That's right. You want to endear yourself to your old lineman? Hold the cookout, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
That's a good idea. All right, so you're about an hour north of Jacksonville. Tell us about your high school. How old is this high school? It goes back to the 1700s?
Yeah, colonial times.
Wow. Glenn Academy. And you guys are known as the Red Terrors.
Yeah, the Red Terrors. It's like a mascot that looks like a pig mixed with like a devil. I don't know.
Wow. It sounds sinister.
Yeah, I think they used to be called like the Terriers or something. I don't know.
Okay. And say, from Terriers to Terrors, because Terror is a lot tougher than Terriers.
I think that changed in like the 70s.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Tell us about your high school days, because you played everything from kick return, punt return, receiver, DB, running back, and even some quarterback?
Yeah, so I was mainly a quarterback. So I spent a year and a half playing everything under the sun. And then my last 3.5 years, I did my thing at quarterback.
So I don't know who the emergency quarterback is on this team right now, but are you going to have that conversation with Jonathan Gannon? Are you still equipped to play quarterback if needed?
For sure. I was actually the emergency quarterback for Seattle.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what was it like in Seattle for those 4 years? I'm thinking here's one plus to being in Seattle for 4 years is we don't like the 49ers and Rams either, so you're already pre-programmed, right? No learning curve for you on that one.
Not at all. Not at all. Especially the red and gold team. Especially them.
Yeah, the Niners. What was it about Niners Seahawks?
I don't know. It was just... I hated them from the time they said, yeah, that's who we got to play twice.
You know what? Here's my theory. I think it goes back to Pete Carroll and Jim Harbaugh. Because the whole Pete Carroll, Jim Harbaugh, Stanford, USC thing, and they didn't like each other then. And I think it carried over to the NFL.
Yeah.
That's what I always saw against theirs. So how about when you go against the Seahawks this year, after 4 years there, they drafted you. You're going to play against them two times this coming season. What do you think your emotions are going to be like in that game, those games?
Cool, calm, and collected. I just can't wait. I just want to compete against the boys and, show them what they missed out on.
How much more production? And our guest is DJ Dallas, current Cardinal, former Seahawks running back and kick returner. But how much more production do you think you can provide than you've been able to showcase so far in your NFL career?
Kind of got put on the shelf a little bit up in Seattle, and I'm just here to compete. I'm just here to compete and just bring my best self for the team. I just want to win, man. That's what I told JG from the time I signed. I just want to win. And I feel like we're on the right path to do that. So
when I look behind James Conner in this depth chart, I'm like, you know what? It's wide open for carries behind James Conner. I mean. So to that degree, what do you think or what do you hope to show in training camp, these coaches, as to what sort of running back you are?
That I'm a three-down back, that I can do everything between the tackles, outside of the tackles, catch the ball out of the backfield, and that I'm reliable and trustworthy.
And then you've been returning punts and kicks since high school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of experience at that part of the game, I gotta imagine your confidence level is pretty high.
Oh, for sure. I think I like punts over kicks. This, that kind of danger factor is exciting.
What do you see when you're returning a punt? Because I think a lot of us look at that, they're like, man, that's gotta be chaos. But I've talked to guys as punt returners, they say as soon as they field that punt, things sort of slow down. It's almost Matrix style. What do you see?
Everything, like after the ball is caught, like that's the fastest part, from the punt, the ball goes in the air to in your arms. That's like the fastest part. But as soon as the ball hits your hands or your arms, however you catch it, it's like everything slows down. You don't think about anything. It's just, it's almost like time slows.
That's interesting. That's it. All right, now the new kickoff rule. Okay, we'll get into this a little bit, but here's your head coach talking to the media, and even the coaches are trying to get a handle because it's so different. And because you can't work with the players, there's enough assistant coaches that they fielded the guys out there, and they tried to go through schemes. Here's Jonathan Gannon.
Oh, yeah. We've been repping it out there. I've been R5. Yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting play. You know what I mean? So Jeff and Sam have studied it. They put us out there. We were playing a week ago, had it videotaped. I thought I made every tackle. He said maybe not, but I didn't go back there and return, but I was close to him. By the time I took off and he had the ball, I'm like, wow, I'm on you, man. So it's going to be cool.
If you haven't figured it out yet, your head coach is really competitive. He's very competitive.
And I love that.
Yeah.
We'll get along.
As competitive as he is, and as a guy who played at Louisville in as good a shape as he still is, there's no way JG could tackle you in the open field, is there?
No chance.
All right, tell us about the new kickoff, because here's what I'm seeing, all right? Fair catches are no longer allowed. Any ball caught in the field of play must be returned. So a lot of people figure the kickoff returner is going to skyrocket in value, hence one of the reasons the Cardinals signed DJ Dallas. Take it from there, and what do you think about these new rules?
So I watched a little bit of it, and it's interesting, right? You're like 5 yards from each other to start. And every play that I've seen or watched of this kickoff, the returner makes somewhat of a big impact. Either you start at the 15 or you start plus 45. And I don't know if that's what our coaches decide that's like the route that they want to go. I'm with that. I'll do it. And as long as it's helping us win, I'll do it. So if they want to put me back there, I'll gladly go.
I've seen, and DJ Dallas is our guest here on the Big Red Rage, I've seen coaches speculate that, you know, it's going to be much more of a play. There's going to be many more schemes and X's and O's to it. Do you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. And that's why JG's working on it now.
That's right. So what sort of impact do you think it's going to make? Because last year, I think there were almost 2,000 touchbacks in the NFL.
It was sick.
Right? I mean, it was kind of a dead play.
Or fair catches, right. And that just made the game not fun. So, yeah, I think it'll bring the returner back into the game rather than just like, kick a touchback. Now we go to the 25.
I saw at the press conference where you said special teams players need a special attitude.
For sure.
What'd you mean by that? Break that down.
So, when I say special teams players need a special attitude, I mean like special teams, you only get a certain amount of opportunities per game. And in those certain amount of opportunities, the game can either be won or lost, right? So you got to go out there with the mentality that this is my job, this is my role, this is what I'm here to do, and I got to do it to the best of my ability because the game is kind of riding on this. Yeah.
And we're gonna see it in the preseason. You guys will be able to rep it and get some of that. Now, as for the offseason, we like to say winning the offseason. You and Trey McBride combined to do just that on a USO tour. Tell us about the trip to Poland.
So the trip to Poland started with a couple, you know, airline delays, but that's airlines these days.
Yeah. Can't be easy to get to Poland. Come on now.
Yeah, for sure. But, yeah, it was my first time meeting Trey, so that was fun.
And you guys weren't even teammates at that point?
So we had just become teammates, never met each other ever.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so we get to Poland. We're touring a whole bunch of different bases in Poland. Ate pierogies for the first time.
That's good.
Don't recommend them. Don't recommend them.
Too many carbs? What didn't you like?
I don't know. Just the texture was like, I don't know. Don't recommend those. But, like, I do recommend visiting Poland and yeah, Poland was a beautiful country. My favorite part was really just, you know, being around the soldiers because they came from Fort Stewart, which is like 20, 30 minutes from my house.
Wow.
And, you know, Army guys. And my brother is actually an 11 Charlie, which is a mortarman in the infantry. He just graduated. So, yeah, the Army kind of holds a special place to me.
So it's easy for you to have conversations with these guys, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
I mean, if, you know, just the connections and then where they're. And then, so these military guys, according to Trey, put you guys to the test, literally?
Oh, yeah. So we did a military fitness test. We're just going to call it that.
So what'd that consist of?
You had a sprint drag carry, which is like you got to sprint. Like basically do a suicide, drag some heavy weights, then run with kettlebells, then do another suicide. You had to do like a 3-minute plank or 4-minute plank. You had to do like dead stop push-ups, like hand release push-ups. You got a deadlift like 365 pounds. And then you finish all of that up with a 2-mile run.
That's what Trey dreaded, because he's like, we don't train for the long distance running.
Yeah, no, we're built for speed, like more so speed than anything. And man, that 2-mile run, I stopped. I was like, yeah, I'm done. But then I thought in my head, I'm like, dang, if I get a bad score, like a worse score than my brother, I'm going to dread it. I'm going to regret it. And I ended up still getting a worse score than him. So I'm like, man, I should have just stopped.
Well, and you know the military guys, they see a couple NFL guys, they want to compete, right?
Yeah, they were juiced up from Jump Street, and I'm just like, oh, man, I already know what we're getting into.
Yeah, I bet. All right, wrapping it up with DJ Dallas. So it's the draft season. What do you remember from the draft process when you went through that? And was there anything said about you that has driven you ever since? A lot of guys take that personally, and they use it as a chip on the old shoulder pad.
Yeah, I just remember waiting around and just watching all the guys get drafted before me. And I feel like I listened to like a little bit of what everybody was saying, but I just felt like some of the guys that went before me, you know, didn't do what I did or didn't bring the same value that I did. And I felt like, or I still feel to this day, that that's like the chip that's carrying me throughout my career.
From Brunswick, Georgia, to Seattle, to Arizona, you hail from a high school that's produced Adam Wainwright, Davis Love III, Kwame Brown, your cousin Darius Slay.
Yeah.
That's impressive. It's great to meet you, DJ. We look forward to this season.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that.
We continue with a Big Red Rage.
With the 6th pick in the 2023 NFL Draft, the Arizona Cardinals select Paris Johnson Jr., Ohio State.
High football character, highly intelligent, well-spoken, mature, dependable, and you can tell that he's made of the right things, the things that we want not only our offensive linemen to be made of, but our entire team.
Franchise tackle, taken in round one a year ago, number 6 overall, Paris Johnson Jr., ended up playing every single snap of every single game last season. And we don't have time to go through the list of luminaries that he went against in terms of the elite pass rushers that just happened to be on the Cardinals' schedule. So you talk about a rookie campaign that you figure is going to pay off going into year two. Paris Johnson Jr. right now is destined to be one of those foundational building pieces for this Cardinals team. The only question now is he playing right tackle or left tackle, and we'll find that out at some point. Paul Calvisi, Ron Wolfley, it's the Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. So Jonah Williams, Paris Johnson Jr., I mean, boom, those two boxes are checked at offensive tackle, are they not, Wolf?
Yeah, no, you're right about that, Paulie. And one of the things I love about this too, and I think Monty would agree with this, you know, there's a philosophy, a draft philosophy that is out there that you're going to go ahead and you're going to draft rookies and you're going to bring them into your organization. And that rookie year is really going to be a learning year. That's what it's going to be. Most of the time, you draft guys with the idea that by year two, they're really going to be able to help you. And when I say year two, I think of Paris Johnson Jr. And I think of the fact, Paulie, to your point, played every snap last year. wasn't great in every game, made some rookie mistakes. But you know what? When you draft a guy like that, you're really projecting him into year number two and how much he's going to grow and how much better he's truly going to be.
You know, a lot of speculation, not only number four with the Cardinals, but number five with the Chargers. Their head coach is Jim Harbaugh, who we know really well from his days with the Niners in the NFC West. Harbaugh telling the media recently just how physical he wants their team to be, and he said that's how he's running things right now with his team. Quote, "My first goal is to make you harder to break," said Harbaugh, because he wants to break teams in the fourth quarter, which reminds me of what Jonathan Gannon and Monty Asafort are doing with the Cardinals, A, and B, why I wouldn't be shocked if the Chargers traded out of number five. Instead of taking tackle or receiver, they trade down and take both, because you got to figure Harbaugh values the tackle. That's the route Monty Asafort went last year. And one of the big reasons why was after they met Paris Johnson Jr. so many times. In fact, Monty Asafort today was asked about, you know, the nickname for all these top 30 visit and how he describes them.
We call it the county fair, and we bring the guys in, and we put them through the paces, and try as best we can to replicate what a Wednesday in November is going to be in our building. And so, you know, I think what we find is that by the end of the day, we have a pretty good feel on multiple levels of who the player is as a person, what they can handle mentally, and really what they're about.
JG was nodding when Monty Asafort said that. You know, by design, especially, you know, the big draft picks they have, first and second round, they try and have so many multiple interviews and touch points with these guys. Because Wolf, as we found out over the years, it's not as much about the player sometimes as it is about the person, right? So you try and get to know the guy as much as the player.
No, absolutely, Paulie. It cracks me up to listen to him right there talk about this, because listen, the player, Paul, you want to watch a player and you want to look at the player and determine if he can play in the National Football League. What do? You watch the tape.
Sure.
That's what you do. But to your point, how many times we hear GM say, you know what, we missed on the person. That's why you want to get as much face time as you possibly can and do as much due diligence on every one of these kids, every one of these guys that you may be interested in drafting. You got to go out and you got to put the work in to get to know them as a person, because as we all know, that's where you miss the most amount of the time.
In fact, here's Monty Asafort on what the decisions will be based upon.
What I can promise and what I always promise is we're going to do what's best for the team. We're going to do what's best for the team this year and then also long term. Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got favorites, and that goes with the territory. So, you know, I think ultimately JG and talked about this at length, like no matter what decision it is, whether it's draft or free agency or cutting a player or who makes a practice squad, every decision that we make, it will always be what's in the best interest of the team.
I'll give you an example. There's an article out, The Athletic. It's an extensive article, and they did a lot of research. And they said the bust rate for first-round wide receivers is off the charts. And Diana Russini was involved in this and all this. Since 2011, they went through all the wide receivers, right? And they put them in categories of, you know, home runs or reaches and busts. And they said 63% over the last 12 to 13 years of first-round receivers were viewed as reaches or busts.
Mm.
So for everything that is this year's draft class as receiver, you have the big three, and then you have about another dozen guys who could be taken through the first, you know, two or three rounds. It's really loaded. Guess what?
Yeah.
It's also way above 50% that these highly drafted receivers have been busts in recent NFL history.
Yeah, Paulie, I would say go back and look at all the positions right there. I think it would probably shock you as to how many busts there have been in the first round period. I think wide receiver, once again, conviction, scouting matters. And how convicted are you about some of these wide receivers? And when you've got three guys that are sitting on a tier by themselves, hey, you may, via conviction, look at a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. and say, we're going to take that guy because he's generational. He's not like everybody else. So, once again, Jamar Chase, there are those guys that come in and make a difference immediately, too.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, we've had this discussion, have we not? It's not whether the Cardinals should target wide receiver one. We agree on that. It's where they can or should draft wide receiver one. How convicted are you still that the Cardinals should stick and pick number four and take one of those big three receivers?
Yeah, Paulie, it's all about what they're getting offered to move out of there once again. This is the great news for the Arizona Cardinals. I don't think they can lose, Paul. You've got Marvin Harrison Jr., a guy I love, and I still think he's the best receiver in this draft. Monty may feel totally different, and that's fine. You got him as number four. He's your consolation prize if you don't trade out of there. And if you do trade out of there, you get three number ones and some change. Oh, man. Cardinals are sitting in the catbird seat.
By the way, to come full circle, Sean Payton was asked today if he feels like he needs to emerge from the draft with a quarterback. And he smiled and he said, well, you'd sure say it looks like we have to draft a quarterback. And yet it's got to be the right fit, the right one. So once again, a lot of speculation. Denver's loading up. Minnesota has already loaded up and made offers to Monty Austin-Ford. Here come the Giants from 6-4. If you did that, if you were the Cardinals, you'd still be able to get one of the big three receivers. Going to be really interesting stuff a week from today. Special thanks, Jim Almonro, Cody Fincher, Matt Lazarus, for Ron Wolfley. I'm Paul Calvisi. This has been the Big Red Rage presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert.
You've been listening to the Big Red Rage, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. Right on the price, right on the corner of the Santan 202 Freeway in Val Vista. The Rage is brought to you by SeatGeek, your ticket to great seats, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast. This has been an exclusive presentation of the Arizona Cardinals Football Club.